Thank you very much.
Good day, mates. I'm like to thank David for inviting me here and Lichvod Arav, and I'm delighted to be here today and to be able to speak to you. I just want to start off by saying that I've been in South Africa and I've been in Canada as a keynote speaker for Yom HaZikaron, and now after traveling Perth, Sydney, and here, I have to say that you guys win in terms of the warmth and the Zionisticness of your community, and the fact that almost everybody I've come across has got very, very, very strong connections to Israel. And so I don't know whether I need to say kol hakavod to Mr. Chester, whether you're in part responsible for this, but
I'll take the credit.
You take the credit. Why not? How long have you been in that, John?
Anyhow. Only 7 years.
Okay. The Seder. So I'm here today to tell you about my son Daniel, but I'm here by chance, and I'm representing 23,000 mothers who've lost a child in the defense of the state since its founding, and 17,000 victims of terror. And so you're going to see my gorgeous 24-year-old son, who was a musical prodigy and who was very academically successful, very successful in the army, but he represents also the Russian and the Ethiopian and the Moroccan and every single one of the soldiers of the IDF. I'm going to show the movie, and this movie was put together as it's taking part of Daniel movie and taking part of the One Family Fund movie. I hope that you'll be able to go to the One Family Fund website and watch their movies in completion, because they're unbelievably strong and moving. And also go to Daniel's website, daniel-mandel.co.il, because the longer movie is incredibly better. Okay. Film. So, no, that film was brilliant. That film was brilliant, and it shows you some of the main work that One Family does, and their work with the camps and the children. But now you're going to watch the film of my son.
Okay.
Okay. As that's it. Okay. I'd like to ask you a question. Is there anything in your life that means enough to you, that's important enough to you, that you're willing to die for it? Because for Daniel, and not just Daniel, but all the soldiers serving in the IDF, the state of Israel means enough to them, is important enough to them, that they're willing to die for it. And they're doing it not just for themselves and their emas, and not just for those of us that either by accident of birth or by choice are living in Israel today. They're doing it for Jews all over the world, including all of you in this room and all of the Jews in Melbourne. They're doing it, and it gives you the option of eating kosher or not, wearing a kippah or not, going to shul or not. And they're doing it because they know what happened when there wasn't a Jewish state. I had the dubious privilege of traveling to Poland with the IDF. They take bereaved family members with them on all of their trips. And it was an unbelievable experience. And when I got back and the dust settled and I was able to collect my thoughts, I had a strong impression. Before I tell you that impression, I just want to say how appreciative I have become of Australia and the Australian government. That when all the countries in the world, including my country, the country I was born in, Canada, closed their doors, there's a famous book, None Is Too Many, talking about their immigration policy, that here in Australia, they said, come on, we need people. And I know that you have the largest survivor population per capita outside of Israel. And, you know, thank God for Australia. Impression that I was left with was that it didn't matter if you were smart or rich or beautiful or strong or brave. If you were Jewish and you lived in the wrong town, you were dead. If you were Jewish and you went outside of your house at the wrong time of day, you were dead. All the attributes that we use to navigate our lives didn't matter. It only mattered if you had 1/16th, is that the amount? 1/16th? When I was on the rainforest tour, and he was telling me, and I was asking him about the your indigenous population, and he was telling me about the up-and-coming legislation, and he says they're defining Aboriginals as somebody who has 1/16th, and I just shuddered because it just rang with me in a very negative way. April 15th, 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago, was Monday, was Yom HaZikaron. I just cried the whole day. Daniel and his soldiers, he was the officer in an elite fighting unit. Their mission was to surround student housing buildings in Shlem, Nablus, where they knew that there were three terrorists. Anybody know the Rabbi Franklin from Sydney? Know of him?
Sure.
His niece was killed in a terror attack on French Hill. And the terrorist who was responsible for planning that attack was the terrorist my son and his soldiers went after. And they surrounded the building, and the idea was they were to get into position, get on the bullhorn and say, put your weapons down, put your hands up, and come out. But the terrorists knew that they were there because they weren't quite as stealthily, they didn't come in as silently as they could have. I guess it's hard when you're bringing 40 soldiers and equipment and tanks and half tanks and who knows what else. Anyhow, they came out shooting. And Daniel had the best protection that the IDF has, and he had the bad luck of one bullet right above his bulletproof vest killed him immediately. I just was in shock. Afterwards, the generals would come to my house, and they would say, lucky bullet. Guy didn't know, it was pitch black. I didn't know where he was shooting. Blind bullet. Lucky bullet. And I'd lie there at night, and I'd go, blind bullet. Lucky bullet. You know what? You know? 6:45 in the morning, I get a knock on the door. It's the day before Pesach. I'm scrubbing my counters. I've got the turkey defrosting in the sink, and I'm happy. I'm a Pesach baby. I love cooking. I love my family. It was spring. I was happy. And there's a knock at the door, and I go to the door, and there's three army officers there. And you have to remember that as a Ola, I hadn't had a parent that had served. I didn't have brothers that had served. And so I was naively innocent. And he walked, the three army officers walked us into the kitchen, my husband and I, sat us down and said, "Are you the parents of?" And at that point you stop breathing. Because I, mother of Nicole, 9 months pregnant, mother of Jonah, a university student in Jerusalem, where there had been a pigua 9 months previously where people had been killed and injured. It was a time of a lot of terror attacks. Mother of Daniel, who officer in the army. Mother of Gabriel, who had gone into the Palsar Givati 3 weeks previously. And the mother of a wild 17-year-old. And I didn't know what was going to come out of his mouth. "Are you the parents of Lieutenant Daniel Yaakov Mandel? He was killed on battle this morning in Shrem." And that was it. You know, your life from that moment on is forever changed. One of the hardest moments of that day is I had to call my mother in Toronto. She's today 91. At Mayav Esrim, in good health. And she was then 81. And they said, "We can't announce the name on the radio until you tell your mother, because in these days of quick communication, we don't want her to hear another way." I said, "I can't call my mother. It's 3 o'clock in the morning." They said, "You have to call your mother. We have to announce it." And I'll tell you the code. When they say there was an incident involving the military... and they don't say there were no injuries or that everybody came out safely, if they don't say that sentence, then it's no good. It means something's happened. Unfortunately, I learned that then. I kept saying, "I can't call my mother." And they said, "You have to call your mother." I said, "I can't." It was one of the worst moments of the day. Daniel was buried. I spoke at the funeral. And what I said is that in life, bad things happen. And we can't necessarily avoid bad things happening to us, but we have a choice of how we deal with it when something bad happens. And we can choose to go up, or we can choose to go down. But we have a choice. And when I speak to those of you who've had children in one-year programs, or those of you who have children now in the high schools, I tell them that this is the most important message that they're going to hear from me, is that they have a choice in how they respond, and that they have a choice to do it positive. And we, our family, Daniel's friends, the soldiers, our whole community of Alon Shvut, we decided that we were going to take our pain and we were going to use it to do positive things in Daniel's memory. And to this day, that's what we try and do. I want to tell you a story that I heard that I like very, very much. I was told that many people claimed ownership of the story. I'd be interested if anybody here has heard a story. So far, nobody has told me they've heard the story before. But I was told it by two bereaved mothers, one by Yudit Dasberg, whose daughter and son-in-law was killed in a drive-by shooting, my neighbor in a lunch food, and one by Noah Lev, whose son was killed in the army 9 months previously, fighting terrorists in Gaza. And the dream goes that this mother had a child that died, and she was beyond herself with grief, and she cried, and she couldn't stop crying. And it went on for days, and it went on for weeks, and it went on for months, and it even went on for years. And she couldn't get herself out of it. One night she has a dream, and in this dream she's going down this long corridor, and at the end of the corridor she sees a bit of light. And she goes towards the light, and it's a door. And she opens the door, and she's in a banquet. And everybody's sitting around a table, full room full of young people, and they're singing and they're learning Torah and they're drinking and they're laughing and they're happy and they're eating, and it's just a positive, happy atmosphere. And in the corner, she sees her son, and she runs over to him. And I can only imagine the joy if I could only see my son for 5 minutes more. And she's going, Hamudi. And she's hugging him and kissing him and hugging him and kissing him. She says, Hamudi. Oh, she's so happy to see him. And then she says, wait a second. What are you doing here in the corner? Why are you all by yourself? Why are you unhappy? Why are you all alone? Why aren't you with everybody at the table? He looks up at her and he says, Ima, how can I be happy when you're so miserable? I truly, truly believe that Daniel wants me to be happy and to go on with my life in as positive a way that I can. I truly, truly believe that he doesn't want me to go around talking about him, but he can't have everything. But, I believe... if I believe that if I cry day and night, it would bring Daniel back to me, I would do it. But I don't. And so the large we, the 23,000 we, were attempting to go back, to go on with our lives in as positive a way as we can. I'd like to tell you a few funny Daniel stories. No soldiers in the room? Ex-soldiers? Anybody? No? Okay. So tell me what you think of these stories. So they take 20 guys into the army, and it's, can be random. Some maybe are strong, some not. Some may be smart, some not. Some may be well-behaved, some wild. They take these 18, 19 and a half-year-olds into the army, and they have to train them into a disciplined fighting unit because... their lives are interdependent. If one guy is singing or talking or whatever when he's supposed to be silent, and it exposes where his seven of soldiers are, then they could all be killed. So discipline is paramount. And they spend, in Daniel's case, 18 months training them. And one of the most common ways that they train for discipline is punishment. You do something wrong or inappropriate, you're punished. Your shoelace isn't tied, your uniform isn't tucked in, whatever it is, you're punished. And the most common punishment that they give is push-ups. And Daniel was very bright and was in the situation where he was smarter than most of his officers, and he was a little bit cynical. So if the officer gave a stupid order, Daniel might smirk. And the officer would say, Mendel, and Daniel would have to go down and do push-ups. Daniel claimed, the other guys also claimed the same thing, that he did the most push-ups in his sevet, in his squad of soldiers. And he was actually quite pleased with the nice shoulders he had developed. So the next time you visited Israel, or the next time you're with Israelis, and you see somebody with a nice set of shoulders, you can smile and you understand how he got them. When Daniel was a soldier, it took a while to get him into the maslul. I don't know how to say maslul.
The track
of being
training.
Yeah, a disciplined soldier. But then when he became an officer, and he had to train his 20 young soldiers, so he did it very well. He was known as an amazing, amazing army officer. If we have time, I'll read you some of the things that were written about him. But they would have to do circuit training, run, climb, crawl, sit-ups, push-ups. They'd have to do this circuit of exercise, and they'd come back. And then Danny would say, you, and you. Do it again, you're too fat. He had extra round of circuit training for the fat ones, the madasashmani. And the soldiers are telling me this. I'm looking at these beautiful young men. They would come every day, to receive comfort and to give comfort, that just, being together was helpful for all of us. And I looked at these beautiful young men and I says, but you guys aren't bad. This is Nahat, right? Daniel's way worked. The comfort that we gave and received was not unique with the army. The comfort was also from our community, from Alanche Food. And the comfort also was from the One Family Fund. You see, especially in their work with young children who have either been injured or have lost a family member, the work they do is unparalleled in Israel. And what we're trying to do here is to set up a committee. The way we have it in England and Canada and the United States to set up a Friends Up committee. I think maybe I have time to read you one quick thing, and I think I know what I'd like to read you. I'd like to read you for the kids. I read what some of his friends said, but for you folks, I'm going to read you what my husband David said at the Shloshim. We had no Shloshim. We came back from the funeral and did Bidikat Chametz. We got up the next morning and we sat shiva for four hours. It was what I call what I assume speed dating would be like, because like hundreds and thousands, even though it was Erev Pesach with the Seder a few hours away, people came from all over the country, you know, with all kinds of stories of how they knew Daniel or didn't know Daniel. The Shloshim was right after Pesach. The Shloshim is canceled because of Pesach. And so we finished Pesach and we went and put the gravestone out. Daniel, on your grave from Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is written the following. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can rivers drown it. And truly it was with an unending love, Ahava Netzchit, that you lived your life in triumph over all that came your way. From the beginning and right to the end, you accepted it all with love. And now it's up to us in the same way to accept with total love the unbelievable and the incomprehensible, the fact that in a blink of an eye, just like that, you've left, you're gone, disappeared from our world. What a task! Almost impossible, it seems, this task that you've left us. And isn't it just like you to do that? And isn't it just like you, dear, dear son, to leave no option for us but to do it? How else could we truly honor your memory? How else could we really eternalize you? As usual, beloved and precious commander that you are, you've run ahead and managed to let us know that on this trek, all of us are going to continue to the end. And if you have any thought otherwise, you would have said, just forget about it right now. Rest assured, Daniel, complete it we will. For one simple reason, it is with eternal love, Ahava Netzchit, that we love you. And that love really does triumph over all. It's relating to the trek. They finished their 18-month army training by doing a 90-kilometer trek. This takes them over 12 hours. And they are not going as we would go on a walk with a water bottle and a cell phone. They're going on a walk. They're carrying their personal...
Sakuta.
Yeah, their personal neshek, their personal gun. They're wearing a vest with their ammunition, their water bottles. They're carrying a lot of equipment on them. And each soldier, in addition to that, is carrying extra. So the guy in charge of communications is carrying the radio, and the guy in charge of first aid is carrying the first aid kit. And they pick the biggest, strongest guy, and they give him the machine gun carry. This has changed because of the amount of injuries it's caused, but the machine gun is 12 kilos more. And to carry it for over 12 hours is hard to come out of it without injuring yourself. You guys probably won't know, but we know what about a three-year-old kid weighs, probably about 12 kilos. And can you imagine carrying it for that 12-kilo kid all day, all night? You know, it's a heavy weight. It's near impossible. So they take this big, strong guy, and they train him. Anyhow, they're so excited. They're finishing their training. They want to be faster than the squads before them, and they set off. And they go, and they go, and they go, and they go. And the guy carrying the machine gun collapses. He's not the original guy. He's the second strongest guy, because the original guy was already injured. Right at the beginning of the trek, the second guy collapses, and Daniel, being a well-brought-up Canadian guy, goes to help his friend, and his officer comes up and says, "Mendel, kachet amag." Daniel, take the machine gun. Daniel wasn't a big guy. He wasn't a strong guy. He hadn't trained to carry the machine gun. But his officer said, "Mendel, kachet amag." He didn't have any choice. He lifted up the machine gun, put it on, and he set off on the trek. And he went, and he went, and he went. He went, and he went, and he went, and he went. He went. He finished the trek. He finished the 90-kilometer trek. Next day he went to doctor. He had an infection. He was homesick. He showed up at a room at, 3 o'clock in the morning. And my husband's a doctor. "Abba, I can't breathe. Do you know, Mamash, we were worried." But he did it, and he did it because his officer said, "Mendel, kachet amag." I, as a bereaved mother, I'm also on a trek called life. And now, in the middle of my trek, my commanding officer has said, "Mendel, kachet amag." I'm not strong enough, smart enough, good enough, but my commanding officer said, "Mendel, kachet amag." I've not been given any choice. So here, in the middle of my trek, I've had to pick up this burden, and I know I'm going to shoulder it until my dying day. And I'm trying to carry it with dignity and with love, and I'm doing it in memory of my son Daniel, and I'm doing it for all of Am Yisrael, and including you. I usually finish by asking, when I speak around Yom HaZikaron, asking people to take on a mitzvah in Daniel's zchut, in Daniel's merit. That we feel that if 10 years later, Daniel is still causing positive energy and to be putting out, then it gives us a very small amount of comfort. As I said, the One Family Fund has sponsored my trip to Israel. And
Australia.
So,
to Australia.
Yeah, to Australia. To Australia. I've done that more than once. Has sponsored my trip to Australia, and I'm very, very grateful to them. And so I'm asking this time that the mitzvah that you do will be in connection with One Family Fund. You want to sponsor a camp in somebody's memory, sponsor a child to go to camp, whatever you would like. My goals here have been threefold. One, I really want people to know about Daniel. I want his memory to stay alive. I feel that if I'm not willing to do it, then who will be? And the other goal is to let people know about One Family Fund, start the One Family Fund branch here in Australia, and the third goal is to fundraise. And so I want to say again thank you very much to David, and to say that I'm be sorry when I get on the plane tomorrow morning, and thank you very much.